Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Roughhousing Podcast. I'm Justin Rourke. My counterpart, Pico Baby John Martin, is stuck in a blue tape walk, and he can't make it, unfortunately. Pico, if you catch this, wish you were here. Anyways, moving on. So today we are joined by Tommy Segura.
Siragusa.
Sorry. Did I misread that? My bad. Siragusa.
Uh-huh.
Okay, wonderful. Tommy, you are with Stay Local ATX, or is it just Stay Local?
Stay Local Austin.
Stay Local Austin.
Technically, Stay Local Austin by Portoro.
Okay, by Portoro. Okay, that sounds like those companies that are like powered by AdWorks or something like that.
Yeah, like, no, it's a little bit like that. It's two brands trying to stick together in a way.
Okay.
Yeah. One to carry through the Austin market and one that's kind of national.
Very cool. We're going to find out more about that. We're also joined with Denise Petit. I'm messing up names today. Denise Petit with, I'm going to mess it up again, Host Del Casa.
Yes.
Okay. We had an email issue in the very beginning, and the D got omitted, so it's Hostel Casa, and I was like, hang on. And they're like, why isn't this calendar invite going through? And I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, you're like, oh,
we had to do the math. They're awesome. They're joining us today because they're going to give us a lot of insight on the short-term rental market, what's happening there, their backgrounds, and what they're into. But first, we definitely want to talk to our loving audience, and we love y'all so much that we want to keep this thing going. We need your help because we're looking for sponsors, and if anyone wants to have their brand, their ad, their product displayed, live reads, taped reads, whatever you want. If you want me to tattoo it to Daniel's back behind over here, I'll tattoo his back. He has a price. Everyone does. Anyways, look to our show notes. Send us an email. We'll get you those pricing, but we'd love to have you here and to advertise for you. Next up, this is my favorite, and this is my special part about this thing, the disclaimer. Have y'all caught any episodes? If you don't watch the show, I totally get it.
I did last week.
Wonderful. Anyways, our disclaimer. Look, this isn't going to be investment advice. This isn't going to be life advice. We're not your life coaches. This is also going to be our attempt at having fun, meeting new people, experiencing new personalities, being tolerant of alternate ideas, and not getting bent out of shape over stuff that we disagree with or find fault with.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to like tap dance and be monkeys. We're here to be people.
That's right.
And if you can't handle it right now,
get off. I mean, go ahead.
Do you already know the tagline? It's no. Go on now, get.
Go but on
you gotta
now,
put,
get.
You gotta put some Texas on it, though. Go on now, get. Go on now, get. Now's awesome. Your time to exit before your feelings get hurt and wounded. Mm-hmm. So, anyways. That's it, and please help us keep this going. In addition, by like, subscribe, share, tell everyone you know, tell your mama, tell your papa, tell everybody, tell your dog, have them tell somebody else, like, subscribe, share. We need you. Thank you so much. Anyways.
All right.
Awesome.
Okay, so we got into it. Before the cameras were rolling, we had Denise telling us a little bit more about her and what was going on there, but Tommy, I want to give her the full spotlight, mm-hmm. but I don't want to interrupt where you were going. Tell us more about Stay Local Austin.
Stay Local.
Yeah, so my wife, Angie, who I hope gets to watch this, we started Stay Local in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And with the intent of, we had three listings in Travis Heights that we owned. And we were both in the corporate world at the time and real sick of that. So we were like, you know, maybe other people are struggling with the same struggles in short-term renting that we're struggling with, and they might want some help. We knew that property management companies were sort of on the rise, but it was still fairly early in the process. Still mostly individuals operating at that time anyway. And so we started the company and quickly grew from no properties to 7 properties in 6 months, 15 properties by the end of the year. And by the time, the end of 2022, we were at 27 properties and were approached by several companies to buy us.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we had built Stay Local on the brand that we were local. Literally, we sat in a car for 45 minutes. I had Post-it notes when we didn't have our name.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are all the keywords? And Stay Local in Austin was what we came up with.
Love the name.
It's great. I figured that someone would just want to buy your domain.
It worked because at the time, because every industry has its arc. And we were at that arc where individuals were just kind of sick of running their thing and they just wanted somebody to take it over. But they didn't want to lose the authenticity and that Austin voice that they, you know, they had dealing with guests and you know, what you walk into when you walk through the front door. And we thought, well, of course we can do that, but let's take it up a notch. Let's turn these into five-star hotels. Let's make sure that a guest knows exactly that that experience is perfect for them. Clean houses, it's clear in terms of what they have to do, how to operate the home, and everything works. And the beds are comfortable, the showers are hot, you know, a lot of the basics, but then trying to up that a little bit with some branding, so we'd leave some things out for them with the Stay Local name. In the early days, we were leaving out booze, but we realized in the disclaimer down at the bottom of Airbnb that, you know, that's not a great idea.
What do you mean? As far as like having like a mini bar or leaving some
like
bar
a
set up?
Wine.
Leaving something there as kind of like you'll go to a nice hotel and they'll say, hey, this bottle of wine's for free. And we'll Tommy, hey, pull this thing up to you
real quick. Do that when it's like...
And if you need to, instead of extending it too far, which might dump over that flimsy little table.
Just kind of sit up.
You can pull this up here and you can you can do this little number.
Okay.
That way we don't hide that pretty face of yours.
Got it.
There we go. We want all the Team Bot magazines to get you on the cover
right.
of this thing.
Yeah. Love that. So we, you know, we felt like we nailed it, right? And we were doing everything right. However, we were still running kind of a small shop. We had my wife and I and probably 8 contractors. And cleaners and property managers, and but we're very high touch, which our homeowners loved because we didn't miss anything. Like we caught a problem the minute it happened, or damages, or anything like that. And so you know, the reputation spread within Austin very quickly, and like we were on the list of realtors and investors and anybody who's everybody. We were at the top of that list, all the way down to my phone number, you know, not just the company name, my name and phone number, like call that guy if you want it run right. And so it was right at the time when the industry was sort of consolidating. Software tools were consolidating. Property management companies were buying smaller property management companies. Co-hosts who were working for maybe 3 or 4 different homeowners were now working for a company. And these companies were going out and getting funding so that they could build these massive back-end firepower, like revenue management.
Because everyone went nuts over the short-term rental game over the past 5 years.
So
they just create a lot of room in the market.
It's gone Marriott-sized, quite frankly. And so now you've got big companies out there like Vacasa, and I don't want to trash Vacasa. I don't have to. There's plenty of bad news out there on them already. You have this place, this inflection point where these companies have gotten so big that they can't really do what we were doing. They can't have a property management. They can't have a property manager managing a portfolio with a high touch thing. Now they've got them spread out from East Side all the way to the lake, from Buda to Pflugerville, and their property managers maybe got 30 or 40 properties.
Geography, too much is going to be a problem.
Yeah. So the industry on the high end, the national, international companies are kind of on a race to the bottom.
So that's where it would lend more to these being local and regional businesses and having, and of course, like if we came across other companies outside of this world, if it was like the bigger it is, I would assume possibly the more cracks, the less personal touch. And when you have these super expensive, very personal investment properties here, you're going to say, I'm going to pay someone to have that extra touch. And
that's
would it be safe to assume that the bigger the company, probably the less price, but then you get the less service off of it? Would you say the smaller companies are generally charging more for that extra bit, or do you think it has
probably
the other way,
although
what do you mean property management?
The bigger that you get, the bigger your portfolio gets, you have more margin to kind of play with, and then you can start playing that Walmart style business I'm going to start working on getting the lowest cost and I'm just going to beat all the mom and pops. But that works when you're selling Chinese t-shirts. Doesn't work when you're
dealing with a $2 million home.
Exactly.
Right.
I'm not selling that thing here. I really want that personal touch. It's part of my pitch when I'm talking to people. I say, hey, I'm going to let you know my rights are what they are, because you, I can't charge you too much, but if I charge you too little, then I'm cutting myself off, and then I'm going to give you terrible service, and then you're going to hate me and sue me.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we found a middle ground that we felt worked for us and worked for the homeowners we were going for. We were trying to stay within 5 miles of downtown, which is, if you look at a map of short-term activity in Austin, and just central Austin, we weren't focused on anything else, it's all there. That's where everybody wants to be.
Are there data maps and reporting maps, or is it all just on Airbnb?
Meaning in an urban
Right. We're talking density heat map, right? They exist everywhere.
Walking distance to South Congress, walking distance to Rainey, that type of thing.
Whereas my market is totally different, but keep going.
But it's still a good market, and it's you know, you've got the wedding market, right?
I'd love to find out where y'all overlap and where y'all diverge. That's the whole point of the show, is getting into the nuance. It's not just the topical, I have an Airbnb. It's like, well, how do you approach that? Who do you talk to? Who are the right people for you? And you both have successful burgeoning businesses that are kicking ass, and so we want to find that out.
Sure.
So if I can backtrack on your story just a little bit. Mm-hmm. You were saying that you were working a corporate gig and then started to get into the short-term rental business.
Right.
What time period was that?
2017. Late 2017.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What were your platforms that you were using? Is it just Airbnb at that point?
Yeah, in those days we were using just those OTAs, Airbnb and VRBO, syncing up the calendars, and then using some pricing tools that were available on those platforms. And then we started using third-party things like Key Data.
Are those outside reporting agencies or someone who's collecting all that data?
Yeah, Key Data was really good in that they were scraping not only what was available on the market, but what people were actually booking.
Okay.
And so you can get down to the street level on that. And so that's how we were kind of analyzing our pricing. And automated tools we didn't use so much because we found they left a lot on the table, because they weren't taking into consideration what's happening here. Like Alabama playing UT for the first time in Memorial Stadium, and God knows when. Those tools don't recognize stuff like that. Which tools don't?
Price optimization tools?
Yeah, not in those days anyway.
Oh, in those days.
Yeah, in those days they were. Yes. Probably now. Now they're way more sophisticated. Yeah, but in those days they just leave money on the table.
Now they make amazing money because they've come so far.
Yes, and that's consolidation of these companies doing really cool things and being bought up and then making a bigger, cooler thing.
What corporate background do you have?
Marketing. I was a corporate marketing events, a lot of corporate events. I used to do 250 events a year, which lend itself really nicely into short-term renting, because it's about a guest experience and, you know.
Hey, by the way, if you're coming into town, I have these things that are also available, and that can be a part of it too. That's
cool. Yeah,
it's a little springboard, I would think, at least a pitch.
Yeah, and when you're running a client conference, as an example, there's like 10,000 moving parts, and all of them have to work, or, you know, the CEO is standing up there with a lav that the batteries have worn out, or, you know what I mean? You got to think about all that stuff. It's the same stuff, batteries.
Or battery sales nightmare. People were calling out because the batters in the remote. Yeah,
your smoke detectors, and those are the things that you're at a dinner party on Friday, and you get a message from a guest going, the smoke detectors. You know, so it's so that experience and 30 years of it was great for me to just dovetail into short term renting.
Awesome.
For software companies, that's mainly who I worked for in those days.
Very cool. Very cool. Denise, we got started just a second ago. I want to hear more. Tell me about you.
All right.
But I want to see more of that pretty face. Can we move this over here and just angle?
Oh, gotcha.
John calls me the microphone Nazi, but John also doesn't listen to the show either, because he can't stand the sound of his own voice. I can't either, and it sounds like two cats going at it in an alley. But but otherwise, I do care about quality audio.
Okay.
So tell us more about you. We were about to get into it, but I didn't want to get too far.
Well, so geez, my story is probably very different, but I'm a psychotherapist gone dating coach. Then
interesting.
Dating coach gone, hey, what could I do that would get me out of this grind of being behind a computer? And I was a headhunter. I forgot that one. So I've had three careers. And this is the fourth. So the most recent was headhunter and dating coach. So what could get me out from behind the computer, making money? Everybody wants this concept of passive income. Mm-hmm. You think short-term rentals might be passive.
It's not passive.
There's nothing passive about
that. Yeah, that's the misnomer. That's what everybody wants to say.
It can be a grind. The great thing is you can systematize it. But so I started 5 years ago. Long story, but the net of it was it's funny what comes back to you in your life, relationships. And that's why I love this show and I love this podcast, is that it's all about building relationships. You really never know where that's going to take you. But my husband and I were given the idea of starting a short-term rental. We said, what could we do? We bought 6 acres in Spicewood. It had some manufactured house at the top. That's a great short-term rental. Rented that out, continued my little dating coaching job. And then the next thing I said, what about this little spot facing a river? Can we put something there? And we thought about it. Someone approached us and said, what about glamping? Right? Mm-hmm. So we were like, what is glamping? So we learned about glamping. We built a safari tent. We placed that in our backyard. And this is all in Spicewood. Mm-hmm. So within 1 year, you know, we were making $90,000 on a tent and $55,000 on a little bitty two-bedroom house and a mortgage that we no longer had to pay.
Does this mean that, so this meant that you found an ideal piece of land that had whatever sort of aspects to it, and you then go for very low development housing, or housing is probably the wrong term, but just like a habitation. But does that mean, I guess you don't have to, does that mean that you didn't go through utilities, adding utilities in? Because if you're doing glamping, I would think, well, hey, element of roughing it, we'll provide you all your stuff or whatever you need, or we'll have this here. But the challenge with having, you know, a lot of people go after these mobile home communities as income producing things, or making them, or something like that. And most of the cost is cutting the curbs, cutting the streets, putting in the utilities. Mm-hmm. Is this kind of that same idea? But you didn't have to go through all that work?
So let me take it back a step. So, because I think maybe a lot of people listening might be already doing short-term rentals, or they might be investors that are investing in short-term rentals, right? Mm-hmm. Or real estate agents that are having clients that are looking for something more in this Me Too market right now that's very vanilla, lots of competition, lots of SCR is not doing so well right now. And so it's really about what we stumbled across was, you know, one thing is, one, you're in corporate world, like you said, you want to get out, you want to do something, you don't think your skills transfer to anything much. Really, real estate has always been an amazing investment that rich people have always promoted, get into real estate. You got to ride the waves of what's popular, right? So we discovered short-term rentals. We decided on a piece of land that would give us a low permitting process to get into, that we could short-term rental a top house to supplement the income. So it's more of like an individual investment strategy of how do you go from your corporate job to getting out? Sometimes it requires big moves. Mm-hmm. We decided, when my husband hit menopause.
We're going to come back to that topic because I have questions.
Yeah, menopause. So that's when a man turns 50. He wants to hunt shit, shoot shit, and he doesn't like his neighbors. He doesn't HOA. He wants to park his boat without getting a ticket. Every man, I pretty much think, hits menopause somewhere around the 50s.
And then, then you become a grumpy old man.
And then you start to get a little bit grumpy. But really, the reality is, ladies, you just need to give him a little space. They need to pee on some stuff outside, somewhere on the back porch where no one's looking.
You said it. My wife gets upset at me when I pee outside.
I'm right?
Yeah, like, what state do you think you're living in?
Yeah,
so, exactly. It sounds like my dream.
So as you
place where I have to pee versus everywhere's the toilet.
Yeah, so you start to hit the middle age years, and the menopause sets in. The woman recognizes it, so prompted, hey, honey, let's move to the country and buy land. But if you don't mow your own lawn, that doesn't sound like a great idea to a woman, because you're like, you don't even mow your own lawn, and yet you want to move to the country, right?
Land, you got to work.
It depends on how you mow the lawn. I used to have, so my wife and I used to live at this one spot over in Southwest Austin off of Southwest Parkway. My family owned it, and I was 20 and broke and didn't have anything, getting out of school and everything like that. And it was 2.6 acres. And it was just like grassland.
Yeah.
Grassland of rocks. Yeah. And it had to be mowed, or else like snakes and rats and raccoons would just infiltrate. Ugh. But the riding lawnmower that was at the site just broke down. The wheel fell off the thing one day. It was just beaten up. I mean, it was leaking oil and gas everywhere. And I was like, fine, I'll switch over to self-propelled.
Yeah.
Self-propelled on 2.6 acres immediately becomes me mowing about half an acre, and then it becomes a quarter of an acre, and then it's just like a perimeter.
A perimeter
to where I could see varmints coming in and take the 22 at that point in time.
Yeah.
So, but
I was sharing that just to say, though, that everybody gets into short-term rentals for a different reason. We stumbled into it based on a timing of life and really anticipating, hey, what can I do as I get older so I don't have to go back to corporate world? This concept of short-term rentals was so attractive even without knowing what it was. Once we made that move on 6 acres in Spicewood on what was the Pedernales River, which is gone right now, but it's still around, right? Yeah. But it's beautiful out there, really gorgeous. But it's not your little comfy HOA-driven world where the grass is mowed, everything's good. Mm-hmm. You are going to have neighbors with shit out on their patio and broken trucks and blah 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 and
Spicewood. Boats on blocks out there.
What's that?
Boats on blocks. Oh, basically the boats that people can't use.
So yeah, like, they say Austin is keeping it weird. Spicewood is weirder, right?
yeah.
So that's what we did. We went there.
Like Cuernavaca weird or?
Oh no, more like Pace Bend Park Drive or Pace Bend Park.
A little further out.
Briarcliff.
Yeah.
That
I played Pooties out there. Is that
Pooties,
close?
Near Pooties.
Yeah, I know what that is.
But no, you get out there and it's a new world. You discover this concept of supplementing your income, supplementing your mortgage. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter what kind of thing that you want to rent, right? What's amazing right now in this timing, and you probably see it more than I do, is stay local, is that Austin has become the boom, you know, the market. The people want to come here. They want to buy here. And I'm not from California, okay? But my husband is. And I still have a 949 number and I catch some slack. But they're coming here because it's cheap to them and other people coming, not just California. But right now, we have such an amazing lifestyle balance. And even though it's still crazy busy and we're all feeling the traffic and so forth, our short-term rental market over the last 3 years was just amazing, especially during COVID.
Oh, it was on fire.
It was on fire, right?
We grew during COVID.
If you didn't make money during COVID somehow, then you just had a shitty property.
You wasted probably one of the few opportunities to make a bunch of money really, really quick.
Totally.
And I would say in multiple fields, but if you were in business for yourself in the right area, most people were going gangbusters at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. What COVID also did, though, is really make people feel the disconnect, like disconnected in the sense of relaxing, recharging, getting back to like their roots, their soul, right? And so staying local was like an amazing thing to do. Hey, I can work remote. Company doesn't call me in. I get to, and our market was booming. Even without going into the glamping business, glamping took off because you could stay very private in that way. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it feeds into the culture too.
Culture. I
mean, there's a naturalism to the area and to the spirit. I mean, it's turning into a different type of soup at this point. But glamping would be all about it. There's tons of outdoor stuff to do. And this, I've been spending like an exceptional amount of time in Colorado lately. I love Colorado. I love skiing. I love the snow.
Yeah.
But when it's so cold and everything's covered in ice or snow or just whatever, you can't do anything.
Right.
Yet here in Austin, we get dumped on with rain, but other than that, it's typically bright and sunny. Our snow or ice days are relatively few. Mm-hmm. So that lends towards a very outdoorsy type of mentality. We draw those folks out this way just because it really caters to that, which is why like we shut down when it's raining for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Right.
It's like nothing to do. Kids are going nuts.
Yeah.
Well, this, 5 years ago, that's how we all started. But just to kind of spin it forward so it doesn't take forever, is that I discovered, oh, you know what? I love this glamping world, so I'm going to build safari tents, and we're gonna go big. So we created something called Safari for the Soul Glamping.
Mm-hmm, cool.
And bought another 6 acres and repeated what we had already done. And then we said, you know what? Short-term rental is so much fun, like you discovered.
Right.
If you love people, you kind of have to love people.
You have to.
we, myself and my partner Ryan, who's not here today, created Hostel Casa.
Ryan Leek?
Yes.
Ryan, shout out, buddy.
Ryan.
We appreciate you making this connection, buddy. We've got you in spirit. We'll maybe throw in some show notes too.
Ryan is he's an amazing. He's a integrator.
Okay.
He can bring systems together. He's a real estate agent from California, moved here young. He's doing a great job. We launched Hostel Casa together really like this last year.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it's a.
So what does Hostel Casa do? What is y'all's angle?
Kind of like stay local. We're focusing on being a very small boutique, high personalization, really focus on concierge services. So our portfolio is going to be very select. Probably less than 24 properties is what we'll focus on for this year.
Interesting.
And and really just trying to use kind of going against some of the digital movement, getting a little more personal.
Can you tell us more?
I just think
Without spilling the beans.
Obviously, I think it's really important to have your systems run on the back end. But at the end of the day, the kind of guests that we want to cater to and the kind of homes and the kind of investors is we want repeat guests. We want people to say, I really want to go stay at that house off of Lake Austin that was managed by Hostel Casa, because every time I go there, not only do they know my name, they know what drink I drink, they know the groceries I like, they know the cigars that I like, they know the places I like to go, they know my dog's name, they remind me of, you know, my special occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, blah, blah, blah. Like, we want a personal relationship, and you can only have that really by staying small and catering to that select people.
Right.
And, you know, if you're just getting into this business, you have to find a niche. You've got to find like what differentiates you or what your unique value proposition is. And we in the hospitality, if you look at the hospitality world, only people that are going to survive are really those catering to guest interaction, guest needs, really being personal. So this personalization movement. So that's our goal for this year, is to just kind of identify 24 or less luxury property rentals. When I say luxury, we can talk later.
That's actually a part of some
of the questions. What does luxury even mean, right?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody says it. Ballpark, especially with moving target, especially with the economies of scale and what that means for that flow of people from different income demographics to here. Yeah. Prices will change. So even in our terms, as far as the sales world for luxury properties, that definition is changing because that overnight. What was I gonna say? I had a question about, and this is both y'all, about with these boutique businesses. Obviously, you have your Austin chapter, and it sounds like you're about to go bigger with the national chapter, right?
Correct.
So with the tendency towards that more personal, local, domestic business, and you want to be careful about that. What does that mean for you guys in leveraging out and hiring? Are y'all doing most of this stuff? Because otherwise you could say, well, I've got a crew of this many people, and if I feel like I'm taking on good workhorse type properties that are going to produce income, well, every 24 of those will yield, hey, I get one more employee, this much more money, and just keep perpetuating it.
Yeah.
Is it going to lend toward that idea of you guys building bigger companies off of that, or is it hard to scale up that way with leverage? Like, Tommy, what does it mean for employees versus you doing all the
work? I feel like when it's done right, meaning what we've seen firsthand with the company that approached us and what they were looking to do, we knew where we were, right, and what kind of company we wanted to be. And when we found, you know, because Vacasa approached us too, and we turned them down because we didn't like how they operated.
Is Picasso just, I don't know it, pardon my ignorance, is Picasso just like a big powerhouse
They're like the
player?
McDonald's version of short-term property management. They are all over the world. It is just kind of, you know, just expect a 4.2 experience.
Got you. And they're full-fledged property managers. They're handling everything.
Yeah, they handle everything.
And they're acting as the host, but they're not the owner.
Very light boots on the ground and more sort of back-end stuff. And they're super top-heavy. Like, they just got a lot of people making a lot of money, not really doing much. But in any case, when we found these guys who acquired us, their approach was very different. They had left bigger companies, including some of them had worked with Vacasa and Turnkey, which became Vacasa, Avant Stay, and those types of guys. They had it right. These guys were like, we're going to do this. We're not going to go into a market raw from scratch and go one house at a time, one employee at a time. We're going to buy a company right out of the box that had everything there. The property managers are there, experienced. The cleaners already know what to do. Everything's there, mm-hmm. including the website. We had already built a website where we could take bookings direct. So instead of them coming in and figuring all that stuff out, they just bought us lock, stock, and barrel.
Nice.
And that's how you do it.
When did that happen?
That happened January of 23.
All right.
So you have all your, they would buy in and have all of the infrastructure there, all the people.
All there.
It'd just be an easy transition.
It's the fastest way to growth in property management is to buy existing small boutique firms like yours. Yep.
And so now they've grown, they bought probably one of the oldest, if not the oldest property management company in Port Aransas. Which has, I don't know, 25 or 30 properties. They've been operating for 15 years. Same thing. Just, we're buying everybody.
Nice.
The portfolio and all the people. Charleston, Villano Beach, Florida. So they're trying to target, they had the intent of targeting four or five markets that they felt were the most active, where they found a company that had its shit together and just buy it. Hmm. And that's, I believe, the right way to scale. Not something I'd want to do. I wouldn't want to have to go out and find $30 million in funding to go grow a company like that. But I recognize that they thought about it the right way. They wanted to retain that personal touch. They wanted to retain the talent that was already there and already enjoying what they were doing. And the portfolio of happy homeowners. And hardly anybody left. Over the course of the year,
would that require some like rebranding or anything like that? We avoid buying portfolios because I worry about that ability to scale up. When we have an easy funnel of people,
they held on to it's literally, if you go to the website, it's Stay Local Austin by Portoro.
Okay,
and if you go and you do a Google search for that, for Stay Local Austin, if you are looking for Stay Local Austin, you're still going to find it. You're still going to find me, and you're still going to find my cell number. Even though I'm really just a business development sales capacity now. I'm not running it like I was, but...
Thank goodness, huh?
Yeah. But this company's smart. They knew, like, why get in the middle of all that? Why come in as an outsider? In Austin, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, cutting through the jungle again, or like with other areas, there's so much risk. You can dump so much, and it takes time.
Right.
It takes a lot of time versus having all those boots in the ground, the same familiar faces and voices that clients and customers are used to hearing and seeing.
Yeah.
That would really cut out a lot of that time.
Right. And there's so much.
And then it just comes down to how are you going to acquire the capital for this?
Right. And there's so much negative press around short-term renting over the last year, year and a half, with companies not doing well and laying off people, pricing and revenue not being what it used to be, and all of this kind of stuff. And it's just, if you're going to continue to do this, then you have to have a differentiator. You have to, like, we have dedicated revenue management. We have boots on the ground who are local. When you're talking to a guest experience person, they're not, looking up in Yelp to find out where to go eat breakfast. They know exactly where to tell you to go get breakfast, or who you should cater, have somebody cater a dinner or something like that. So it's that retaining that authenticity, but having that back end firepower that can compete with Marriott Homes and Villas or Plum Guide or all of these bigger companies, and being able to have a portfolio big enough to even be part of those programs, because you have to have a certain number of homes to even get on Marriott's homes and villas. So you want to have that industrial firepower, but you want to come across as a local company that I can get in my car and in 5 minutes I can be at your house.
You still want that genuine integrity, right? That, like, okay, that makes sense.
But that comes down to people.
True.
Who you hire, who you have behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I don't care what kind of corporate umbrella you have, what kind of back-end systems, if you use VAs, even VAs. VAs are super popular now.
We have fantastic VAs.
Right.
By the way, our VAs, we love you very much. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Yeah, and our VAs are super smart. They've got great attitudes. They're ahead of the game when it comes to learning software and so forth. Mm-hmm. But you still have to have that that those local good people who actually like what they're doing, mm-hmm. and it has to be in your culture. You probably had that in your culture.
They know where all the sand traps and water holes are. You know, they know the house has a P-trap that clogs. You know what I mean? So you're not having to figure all this stuff out while trying to scale a company.
Right. What would the company organization structure look like?
For a property management company?
I mean, let's go with you. Let's shift it over here. For Hostel Casa, what does that corporate structure look like as far as just top down? You don't have to be specific naming, but like what levels? Who are the people you need to pull this off?
Yeah. Well, when you start small, which is where we're at right now, we started less than a year ago. So when you start small, it's going to be probably mm-hmm. like you did. You have. Yeah. You know, one person who's really good with the systems, and that is the systems person. They're the person that reads the data, watches the data, makes sure things integrate correctly. Mm-hmm. They make sure all your tools together. Then you got to have the marketing/visionary person. Mm-hmm. And that would be kind of more my type of personality.
I was going to ask. I feel like that might be you.
A little bit more.
I'm not sure how much Ryan, but I have a feeling.
I can do systems, but mm-hmm. I'll do analysis, paralysis, and mm-hmm. explore 20 options before I decide on the right one. So you at least need those two people. And then in the very beginning, there's so many amazing tools out there that you don't have to have the immediate expertise in, say, revenue management. That's required, and it's important.
Y'all have said that twice. Mm-hmm. Tell me, and I don't mean to deviate. We'll come back to organizational, but what is revenue management, just so I don't get too deep and get confused?
Price optimization / revenue management, two different things.
Making sure you're looking at the calendars and making sure that everything's priced right, and so you're not you know, the way people shop today is different, meaning a guest used to book, and this is true on some key dates. They used to book a month out or 2 months out. They got to a point where they realized they could wait up to the last minute, because unlike booking a flight or a hotel where, you know, there's no advantage of booking way out in advance. In fact, it's probably better to wait till last minute.
Because does that mean what? More because homeowners lower are prices to get to attract people to fill those vacancies?
Property managers are starting to panic and lower their pricing as it gets closer to the date. Revenue managers is making sure that you are watching that, but also these sites like an active host. They want you updating the listing. They want you making little tweaks. That all plays into the algorithms that brings those listings to the top. So you're just taking advantage of, in a way, it's really kind of, it's part marketing.
Does it I guess all that activity benefits the people that care the most? Is that the idea behind those algorithms for generating that way, if they're gearing it in that direction, do you think?
Think about revenue management and price optimization in the hotel industry. We imitate that. Mm-hmm. So when the hotels know that there's micro events coming to town, they know to raise their prices. Mm-hmm. So we use tools, what we call price optimization tools. Mm-hmm. A popular one is Price Labs. Another one is what, RevPAR?
RevPAR,
Beyond Pricing. There's like around four big guys, right? Mm-hmm. And so we plug our Airbnb and our VRBO listings and our into that tool. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to know when the micro events are coming, because you can't possibly know when everything is coming.
Right.
But they know, because they receive the data from other companies, like mm-hmm. he mentioned, key data companies, mm-hmm. key analytic. Hotels do the same thing, but they've been doing it for decades, so they do extremely well.
So it's extremely refined at mm-hmm. that point.
It's
in time.
Very refined.
I guess I would allow the short term. It's like saying Kleenexes versus like tissue paper. I have to like retrain myself out of it. So it's like the short term rental market can piggyback on all that ground cutting by the hotel and hospitality.
Yeah, the best practices that they implement are what we are also implementing.
Right.
Although many short term rental owners are individual owners that may not think like a hospitality company. But when you're like stay local size and trying to run a company that does property management, you have to know those things, because you want to get the best profitability for your owners, right? Mm-hmm. Not about your guests, about your owners. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, you have to be sensitive to what's going on in interpretation by guests. So there's a lot of issues that are coming up now, you know, Airbnb being a real dominant company or platform for renting, and VRBO being very dominant. Now, tons of other boutique smaller, more niche-oriented things getting into the world of competition, the fees are coming up, right? So there are fees that we can control as property managers and as individual owners. And then there are fees that you really can't control, mm-hmm. as in your city taxes, mm-hmm. your county tax, state taxes, city, county.
Yeah.
And then the fees that your platform charges, like a booking.com charges a certain percentage to guests versus an Airbnb, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now the prices are getting so high and the cleaning fees because of the competition for cleaners and or mm-hmm. proximity.
Great cleaners, by the way.
Right.
People who show up, because I imagine that you have to pay. I would think you would have to pay for talent in that situation. I want it done. I want it done right. You have to do this every weekend. We have
trial and error,
you got to train them out. They prefer it, honestly, as opposed to just cleaning somebody's house, because they're cleaning these homes like 2 and 3 times a week.
Yeah, they're less dirty.
They're less dirty.
Much better than being a house.
They can move through, cleaner. And so you can get them staging, doing the towels in a fun way, or flowers on the toilet paper kind of thing, and they'll do that stuff because they have time to do it. But it's just all about training. But yeah, I think I agree with everything you just said. And I feel like the other thing that is a change over the last, I guess since the beginning of all of this, and it's not just Airbnb and VRBO. Travelers are getting smart. They'll mm-hmm. find a listing that they like. Mm-hmm. They'll see that it's managed by a property management company, and then they'll go find that property management company to see if they can book direct. So I want to say in 22, our direct bookings outpaced our VRBO bookings.
And that is the goal.
Direct booking to avoid
15% or 20% on top of all the other things they got
to pay. Right, to pay for the platform.
That's right.
Companies are marketing. Mm-hmm. So you pay for marketing.
Right.
But once you develop the skill and you develop the following and you have your own social media and you kind of know what you're doing,
yeah. mm-hmm.
then you are going to get more increase. That's the whole name of the game, is to try to not make them your boss anymore.
Right.
To get off.
That's right.
Get them off your back.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. I'm now learning that.
Use it for branding instead.
Right. I'm now learning. I always used to just go to those sites for my wife did or whoever, and I'm like, oh, we've been doing this wrong. This is some value for me, at least the next time I travel. I want to go back to that organizational structure before I, mm-hmm. Brain on this thing.
Yeah.
So very cool. The revenue, what is it?
Revenue management.
Thank you. But going back to the organizational structure. So once you have your marketing person, your systems person, you're definitely gonna need your cleaning resources, and then you have a person in the field.
You basically have a head of operations, really,
and
that's that. All those people you just mentioned roll up to
mm-hmm.
somebody who's
they do your quality.
It's almost like a lifeguard at a pool.
Is that the same person who answers the phones for the residents?
It depends on the size of you mean the guests?
The guests, excuse me.
Yeah,
we're gonna have different. I'm gonna lean on my long term property management.
Every company is a little different, but most are getting to a point where there's a GX team. We have a GX team, and they just do nothing but watch those messages come in, questions
which,
and all that.
Which a lot of time is offshore these days.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And a lot of it's automated.
And
so
a lot of
check
automated.
In and check
and AI
out.
AI is really.
Yeah.
Increasing that ability.
Yeah.
And AI has been amazing in terms of, and not all of us have really even implemented the full breadth of what it can do.
We're probably scratching the surface.
Yeah. We're just scratching the surface.
We're just having it write, awesome listing
and
profiles.
Figuring out when do you automate something, and, you can't automate everything.
Right.
The troubleshooting aspect would be the thing that I think someone would, online or if they're a guest, would probably lose their mind if they really want to talk to someone who's going to come up with the right solution and know for sure.
That's right.
Versus having AI riff or play within some sort of guidelines. But there's probably other questions well that will come up or that pertain to.
We do like a 500 point audit on every home to understand how to work the remote control. Where is the Wi-Fi and how would you reboot it and all that kind of stuff. And then we build a manual so that when we get a message, because, unless it's an automated, automated messages are just the dumb, easy stuff. Check in, check out, thanks for booking, thanks for the inquiry, we'll get back to you. But when it's where do we find this thing? Or how do we operate this thing? Then those GX people will go to that manual and they'll know exactly based on that house what to tell them. You can't automate that. You got to be on point for that. And we have people that are on point, not only for that, but we install noise monitoring systems inside and outside the home to make sure dB levels aren't getting broken, those thresholds aren't being broken. We all of our locks are tied to a system. We see everybody coming and going, literally, not see them, but, you know, or listen to conversations, but we're seeing the activity and we're hearing the levels. And if things are breached, they get an automatic message to calm it down. If that doesn't work, somebody from our team is calling.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all have basically sort of microphones to test the decibel level.
That's right. And people. Even the number of mobile devices in the home.
If it gets too loud.
Yeah.
Even, do you mean number of mobile devices?
So it can detect how many.
Oh, in case there's
many,
like 30 people having a house party. Oh, whoa.
Yeah, you can get real jiggy with your property management, your tools.
Well, you know, and I appreciate that because you couldn't make that happen in a hotel room. So, I mean.
That's right.
So why not in these situations where there's an individual owner?
Ring cameras and on the front and back door. Never in the house. I mean, that's just.
That's weird.
There's no need for that. But
More of a liability to get yourself kicked off of platforms.
Yeah. Kicked off, sued, who knows what. We've all seen those horror stories online of just people who don't get it or they're doing it on their own. And they think, hey, this is okay because I don't know any better.
Honestly, I prefer your market. Your market is we just want to get away. We just want a retreat. Our market is like party goers, like hardcore party goers in some cases.
Especially for that interior. Are you referencing the glamping aspect or the...
Or just think about hill country. Like in Austin, we divide it up kind of like hill country.
Yeah.
Downtown. And then we have, I don't know what you call Leander and... Round Rock and so forth. They have a really good market as well.
Yeah.
But my focus is more hill country.
Okay.
Because I understand more ranch and lake properties and the clientele that we serve are different. And so the guests come for different things. Like we really, and I'm not going to say luxury homes out there don't have high touch or high tech.
Right.
But it's not as necessary.
Right.
Like we're not there to monitor your noise. Right. I don't put noise monitors in the clients, and I don't recommend those in some of those country things because people come to really get the privacy and the exclusivity and the disconnect more in the hill country. Yeah. And so they pay great money, but for less tech in some cases.
In those instances to where maybe you're not going to have the noise complaints is an issue if people end up having a handful of people over, they're like, hey, I've got this big property, there's a lot of land out here, or do you limit the number of guests in that regard, or is that something?
You always need to have rules based on owner expectations and based on expectations, right? Because I don't own the homes, they do. So we look at, okay, what kind of neighborhood are you in? What kind of home do you have? What is our people limit? What's our rules for extra additional guests? What's our maximum? What's our septic?
Yep.
Right, we got septics out there, right? Yep. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, though, that's why I really love to have people that are talking to your guests, is because if you're, you know, Justin talking to your guest and you say, hey, listen, I see that you have the maximum number of people, 10, listed on the listing to come. Just curious, are we celebrating a special occasion today? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, it's so-and-so's birthday. Oh, awesome. Where are they all coming from? Oh, they're just local in Austin. That's a flag to me.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be more coming.
In Austin.
Versus, we're all from Houston. Okay, well, they're probably not having like 5 more guests come join their party. And, you know, so if it's an Austin guest, Austin people are sometimes the worst. You got to watch them.
That went counterintuitive to what I was thinking, because I was thinking, oh, they're from Austin. That means that they're going to go home at the end of the night
their
place.
Yeah, it probably means they're booking a party.
Yeah, I got you.
What they're doing.
And is that a common issue, or at least something? I feel like it's probably a rite of passage for y'all's line of work.
You know what? Do you think, here's the thing.
It was for us, but there are things you can do to prevent that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny in the world of property management, and my experience is less than yours and not the same market, but I always look at, okay, well, whenever people are whining on Airbnb Facebook groups about, you know, oh, I keep having horrible experiences and the guests are this and that, and Airbnb did nothing. I said, well, let's first look at their price. Because people make prices in this world for reasons. A discriminating buyer will pay more to have and to follow. They usually follow rules better. They usually behave differently. When you have a cluster of people all trying to save money, right? They're more likely to have their other friends come and so forth. So
the more they can pile on, the cheaper it is for them.
Yeah, so like, you know, price can be a big factor in determining your level of clientele. Mm-hmm. And I never believe in just trying to overprice something to price it.
Of course.
You got to look at your competition. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. in the Hill Country, you have usually larger places with more distance between. And doesn't mean you don't get bad guests. You get bad guests.
Of course.
I could tell you some stories about some of my guests in the Hill Country. But it's, you know, at the end of the day, price helps. But yeah, we're just talking about the difference between right now. You have in every state or every city, you have niches that attract certain people. Like the Hill Country attracts people from predominantly Houston, number one market.
Interesting.
Okay. Second would be, believe it or not, like, well, in my small glamping stays, that would be Austin, would mm-hmm. be my second market. But normally San Antonio and Dallas mm-hmm. is followed from mm-hmm. Houston. But Houston is really, in my market,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Our number one people, because it's so crowded and there's so many people there and it's so much concrete going on that when they think of Austin, we are just so glamorous.
And they can get to us.
Interesting.
They can get to us.
Are we pulling anybody from Dallas at all?
Do yeah, they want we to do, with us? But not as much. Yeah.
I feel like Houston's like, hey, what's up? I feel like Dallas is like, you know, we're fine over here in Dallas.
Yeah.
Event driven. Yeah. Probably.
I think so. I mean, in the early days, it seemed like it was people from all over the United States. Once COVID hit, if you could get in a car and drive somewhere, then you could have a vacation with your family. You know, babies were still being born, people were still getting married. And so it was a lot of like Houston, Dallas, mm-hmm. San Antonio, people from the Valley coming mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
That type
probably
of
if you weren't, probably if you were not confident enough to fly, then where could we drive to?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me kind of change the direction here. I'm curious about the current state of the short-term rental market right now.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of players falling out because mm-hmm. I think that there's been some price changes. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
That's right.
There's been some reduction in price changes.
Yeah, about 40% lower in some cases.
Have there been any increases anywhere? Is anything killing it? I'm curious.
Let me touch on this because this is Austin, if it's nothing else, it's like the test bed for everything you'd ever want to know about short-term renting and where it's all going and where it's not. It's one of the most active markets in the world, Central Austin, is what I'm speaking mm-hmm. to. And so, yes, pricing is down, but the reason for that is inventory went up. You've had, I know this firsthand because we got a lot of phone calls from these folks. They were mainly investors who gotten the memo, go out and buy a property and get it on a short-term market.
Usually by the time they've gotten the memo, they're a little bit too late.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so it went from, I don't know, 12,000 operators to 22,000 operators in a year in just Central Austin. If you looked mm-hmm. at a map, it is like you can hardly not see a dot. You know, I mean, it's just like nothing but dots. And so, of course, that is going to have an impact on nightly rates. And these are properties, particularly if it's investor or realtor owned, they're 100% available. So you've got, right now, you've got realtors sitting on properties they can't sell, and you know they're like, well, let's make some money while we can. Mm-hmm. So they'll outfit it, and they'll run it for as long as they're going to. Investor-owned properties, the same thing. Problem is, those are very different clients than a homeowner, Betty and Bob, who want to hold on to their property. They've got properties maybe somewhere else. They want to come back to it. They want family to be able to use it. But it's probably 75 or 80% available to us every year. They bought their home 20 years ago or 15 years ago or 10 years ago. The math works for short-term
because
renting.
Because they've got time.
And their mortgage is good. Yeah. They're all in. We can jump their hurdle on a bad month.
Mm-hmm.
There's math that doesn't work. And so that's what you're seeing now is a lot of these people that jumped in 22, you know, got hit hard in 23 and they're like, this isn't working.
Property taxes went up.
The sales prices went up tremendously. And at the time, whereas your prices would match what they would pay if they had a lien or a mortgage note or property taxes, right, depending upon what it was. When that income drops, right, now they're underwater. Now they're looking to pivot some meaningful way, especially when the market gets oversaturated. They can't get the bookings that they need,
right,
and now they need to figure out what to do.
That's right.
Those folks are actually like feeding into the sales side, yeah, at the moment, adding to the, whereas they were sucking up inventory, right, which was like accelerating our price growth.
Yeah,
they're now adding to the sucking them, they're adding to the inventory, yeah, and then basically watering down the prices again. Well, the other way.
And if you started out with a shell, you've got a factor, you're going to spend, you know, probably $20,000 outfitting a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom home.
To get all the furnishings and everything like that. Do y'all have like set lists that you're like, here's all the links, here's what you need to get, buy that?
Yeah, we have a checklist. It's sort of like, this is, if it's a shell, for sure. It's like, mm-hmm, queen bed, you're never going to go wrong with a queen bed, but if you can get a king, great, bedside table, you know, et cetera. They're kind of like the guest essentials that they just got to have. A place, mm-hmm, to hang clothes, place to put their luggage, bedside tables, lamps on both sides, et cetera, et cetera. Purposeful, durable, stylish, but you know, nothing more than that. You don't need to do a bunch of crazy stuff. Try to get a theme going if you can, but it's
not like jungle, disco, what are you thinking?
Whatever.
Well, I'm telling you right now, along the lines of that.
Yeah.
So 2022, you could just do that. Do a basic outfit, make it cool, make it comfortable, you'll make money.
Yeah.
2023, when our recession kind of hit, mm-hmm, or at least the fear of recession and recession, people
depends
were...
Depends on how you look at
it. Yeah, depends on how you look at it, right? Yeah. In Austin, we didn't feel it quite the same. But then there's that... A lot of people in the market, they're really used to making money. It wasn't really that hard. You just put it on Airbnb, VRBO, mm-hmm, people got business. Then there was the dip, right? Mm-hmm. Where 2023, you started saying, what happened? The prices started going down, the same price they were getting, they can't get now. If you look at Orlando or big markets like that, you look at Nashville, markets like that, mm-hmm, very competitive, mm-hmm, markets, Florida, right? You can't even get a house in Orlando, and if you expect to open a family home in Orlando, if you don't have a, I'm talking like game room on steroids with the bowling alley and
just everything.
We're at that place so now. So much, all that, right?
Yeah, cowboy pools
cowboy everyone's pools. That's wants happening to put a cowboy.
It's got to have all those little kitschy things like
to get the attention.
Differentiators.
You're catching.
Why me and not somebody else?
Is that the current?
It's happening here
right now.
Happening.
So you need something. So as do y'all guide any investors who are saying, I want to get into, mm-hmm, this game?
A lot.
And homeowners. Is that totally kind of off the bat? You're like, here's what you're going to have, mm-hmm, to do.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I walk a property, even a hill country. Like, it used to be cool just to have like an old cabin, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is wood, right? No, that don't work anymore.
Now you got to have a heated cowboy pool.
Now it's got
to
be
like a certain kind of
design and a certain kind of funness. And it can't be overly done in the hill country because then that becomes too fancy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Fair like, there's you're going against the grain on that.
Even in glamping world, there's a thing like, why would you, like, we do safari tents as well, I mentioned, right? Why would you make a safari tent and put all of the, you know, Martha Stewart stuff or whatever the name, mm-hmm, brands, fill it with Wayfair stuff?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's just a tent with Wayfair.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can't. You got to do something different and cool.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to, what kind of experience do you want to curate, and who's your guest avatar?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know when you buy a short-term rental who that is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to either be like-minded in that kind of person and you bought in that particular area because you know the kind of people, mm-hmm, that come, or you need to have some information or data to kind of assess that, because the market's not saturated. Everybody says market's saturated in short-term rentals. Well, it might be saturated in the 4-bedroom homes.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's saturated in the 12-bedroom homes or 15-bedroom homes.
That
right? So you,
I didn't even think about like
you got to look at
that size, but I'm sure that would definitely be part of it.
You have to, before you buy in a market, you need to know what is the shortage of the particular home, mm-hmm, size that you're looking, mm-hmm, to buy. You're not going to go to Broken Bow right now, for example, Broken Bow, Oklahoma,
mm-hmm,
and just buy a 4-bedroom cabin. It is so flooded. Right. So, mm-hmm, so it doesn't mean Broken Bow is a horrible market. It is inflated on price.
Flooded is in which way do you mean?
A certain number of bedroom count.
Okay.
Like, there's always a shortage of something in every city and every area of a city. You got to figure out what that is.
How do you find that out, or is that just y'all being on top of it, being professionals in the game? And by the way, I wanted to jump in, but I didn't want to stop you on your role. Mm-hmm. The reason, the way that people figure those things out is by having folks like y'all mm-hmm. go out there. The property managers can, at that early introductory phase, I want to get in, I'm doing my fact finding, mm-hmm. I want to know what team I'm using, yeah. and with that team, yeah. I want their guidance to make sure that this goes well. So that way it's great yeah. for you, yeah. and also great for the client as well, mm-hmm. and that way they don't have that time. That's yes. a great value proposition to come to you guys.
Yeah. It's all about data. It's all about the data. Like, there's yeah. a gut feel, because we've been here and he knows his market, I know mine, so there's mm-hmm. a gut feel. But the reality is, like, I just went to a huge Nashville conference put on by a great leader named Bill Faith, and the conference is called Build Short-Term Wealth. And everyone would say, how do you know? There's a company called mm-hmm. STR Analytics, for example, that we use in our market. Kenny Bedwell, if you're listening, mm-hmm. Kenny, I'm giving you a plug.
What's up, Kenny? Come on Kenny. This podcast. Yeah. Show some people who you are.
He has all the data that he can just plug in what city you're looking at. And based on all of the data from AirDNA mm-hmm. and yours, mm-hmm. The one you named, tells you, okay, yeah. there's a shortage of 6 bedrooms here in this particular yeah. neighborhood. This is where you should buy. Mm-hmm. And here's what kind of money you're going to make. So, like, it's so advanced right now with the tools and the data that we have, that if you hire an experienced property manager and we have that type of talent on our team, it's not you don't have to hedge your bets. We can tell you within a reasonable amount of yeah, money how right. much money you're going to make, what that's going to cost, what's your profitability, who cares monthly?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happens to the gross what's the gross at the end of a year?
I have a question, and this probably flies counter to what you just mentioned, just because I was going to say, what type of product, and Stefan connected you and me.
That's right.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Love Stefan. He's a great guy. So I'm glad to see yeah. him here on this podcast soon, or if not in yeah, general. He was saying, hey, to be in this market right now, he was like, your 3-2 1984 built scenic Brook property is not going to be like, I'm sorry, it's just not going to be the greatest Airbnb. Maybe if you bought it at the right time 100 years ago right. and you have right. like no mortgage note and no that's property right. taxes that you got some sort of senior exemption on,
right.
all your stuff's paid right. for, you luck box into it, yeah, then you'll probably be successful that's at that
right.
point in time.
That's right.
But what does... There's shortages, there's demands, there's mm-hmm. there's surpluses that are going to water down what people are going to be getting. Mm-hmm. But what to get into this thing? What type of property is going to be more like? I'm hearing a lot of luxury. What property is more likely to be successful these days? Mm-hmm. And what versus one that's not? Besides getting outside of the demand and,
yeah.
and surplus and all those other things.
And I'm speaking about my market.
Yeah, and let's go with your market.
Our market, it's all about the location of the home, the okay. size of the home, but also the amenities. Mm-hmm. So in the summertime, if you have a pool, if you have a heated pool, you're going to outpace everybody else. I don't care if it's a 3-2 or 4-3 or what. Because that's a draw, and you can get more for a nightly rate for it. But I never want to feel like I'm talking anybody into this.
No. I want y'all again. I'm gonna remind everybody. I had a disclaimer in the very beginning. This isn't investment advice. We're yeah. chatting. We're playing yeah. what we know.
Right.
It doesn't mean that we're fact checked or yeah. anything like that. There's always nuances. There's always some mm-hmm. sort of counter.
That's right.
Keep that in mind. If you want to get into this game, reach out to these people individually, get some business going with them. That's why I want them here, and yeah. also why we want to talk about this. But I'm coming at this whole idea
yeah.
from a point of curiosity.
Yeah.
And you're going to build upon curiosity with facts and everything. You got to build from there, not just skip straight to the end.
What we always looked for was the right situation. Meaning, it's a home we're proud of. It's an area we know will do well. It's a home that we know will do well. But it also comes down to the relationship with those homeowners. So unlike you, we don't own a bunch of properties that are out there. We're working with homeowners who are looking to us to go, is this going to work? And so I have a lot of questions for them to really figure out, what are your goals? What do you want from all of this? How does this play out for you year in, year out? And is this a right fit for us, and are we a right fit for you?
And it comes down to the math. It comes down to what their goals are. It's like, you know, there are situations that don't work and there's math that doesn't work. So when I'm running into the situation like that, and even if it's a six-bedroom home in Barton Hills, if I'm dealing with somebody who's like got to hit a number and I know based on the analytics we're not going to hit it, I mean, I will tell them, like, yeah, this isn't going to cash flow. You'll bleed off some of your expenses, but you're not going to make any money. And then I just leave it up to them to decide, because it is what it is. What I don't want to do, you know, 6 months down the road is get called to the mat. Because the revenue wasn't anywhere
How
near.
How come I don't have this cash flow that you promised me, or that I expected, or that told me online that I should be getting?
That's right.
I tell folks the same thing, and what I tell them is, I can help you be successful, but I can't make you be profitable. That depends on every other factor your income statement. I can help you be successful with those things to where we're going to minimize as much as possible and maximize as much as possible, but that's not going to go against the market or your loan, mm-hmm, or insurance or how all that stuff stacks up, or what you decide to do or not do, or what we walk into.
Yeah. Guests don't care that you paid $3 million for your home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They just don't.
Right.
The nightly rates are the nightly rate for that home and those amenities and that location. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, everything you said, I totally agree. You know, at the end of the day, it's like you can hire the most expensive trainer out there, right? Physical workout trainer.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, what are results? What do you define, mm-hmm, as an individual as results, right? So when you get with a property owner and they're, or somebody who wants to get into this business, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're listening,
as a property manager?
No. Mm-hmm. If or you want to get investor. Into this business as someone to own a short-term rental and make, mm-hmm, money, mm-hmm, right? People either buy a short-term rental because it's cool and they always imagine having a beach house and they'd love their family just to hang out a couple, you know, weekends a month and make a little money, pay a mortgage, or at least kind of break even. That's, mm-hmm, one type of person. There's investors that have a portfolio of investments and they want that thing last year to hit 30% at minimum cash, mm-hmm, on cash return over 3 years last year. This year, they're not going to get that more than likely.
This year they're going to have to weather the storm, right?
Yeah. It's going to be less, but it's still going to be more than they could put their money in a bank, mm-hmm, or put it in a CD or something like that. So then there's their investment mentality, and that's usually, okay, I'm looking at my equity growth over the period of 5 years, 6 years, mm-hmm, 7 years, 10, mm-hmm, years, and land in some cases, right? And at the end of the day, all I need is that this needs to be making equity, hitting a minimum amount of return, and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Send me my check. I don't want to talk about all your guest stuff. Just make sure you get it.
Yeah, you do what you do well.
Mm-hmm. And then you have some people that, you know, they're not really sure why they're getting it. They just heard it was good.
Yeah, some people just jump in just
for
hype.
They just, somebody told them it seemed like the right thing to do. They heard it on Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or whatever they heard it on.
Oh, Bigger Pockets, my
goodness.
Bigger
Pockets, you
know. Has Bigger Pockets, I mean, I love Bigger Pockets for what it is, but has Bigger Pockets been kind of like a thorn in your side when you're having these conversations? Because sometimes I get people talk to me about renting out rooms individually. I'm like, look,
you could
squeeze this melon however you want to. It's not always the prettiest or the easiest.
I mean, you know, again, the concept of making money in real estate, for whatever level you are of your income, there's a way. If you don't have money and you don't have a fat 20% to put, mm-hmm, down, they say, oh, well, do arbitrage, Airbnb/, you know, short-term, mm-hmm, rental arbitrage. Well, that was cool, like last year or the year before, a little tougher this year, but in certain markets, it's still working well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother subject.
And every market is different.
Yeah, every market is totally different, right? Yeah. But depending on how much money you have in your pocket, what your credit worthiness is, your financial situation, how old you are, how many kids, mm-hmm, you have, how you like to travel, like back to the gym thing, you know, everybody has a different goal. So what's good?
Mm-hmm.
It's relative to the individual. We can give you basic guidelines of what investor definition of is what's good based on cash flow and where you can put your money. Because, mm-hmm, where you put your money is what matters. You only have so much money and so much time, mm-hmm, you know. And so for me personally, the people I like to work with, they're about freedom. They want freedom. And so they don't want the hassle of running that property. They want to make, mm-hmm, money. They want to hit certain returns. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm actually providing a service in exchange for their freedom.
Right. You're liberating their time.
Yes.
So that way they can go about and
that's the kind of people
that are going to make their money, or their properties can be protected, or paying whatever it needs to do to sustain itself.
If you are worried about what the cleaners did in your house and how they didn't get a crevice or a corner, and you're going to call me and tell me about that all the time, but I'm still sending you an amazing check every month and your reviews are 5-star, mm-hmm. you're probably not a great client.
Micromanaging the manager.
That's a really good point. I think that was one of the most challenging things, because you meet a passionate homeowner who's decided they want to do this. That's good. However, some of that passion or enthusiasm can spill over into a high maintenance situation where, we've really had to have talks with homeowners like, look, this is our process. And if you come in the middle of our process and you're seeing what you're seeing at that point, understand that you've walked in the, it's like walking into the mechanic shop while they're working on your car, while it's still on the rack, and going, I don't think this is done yet. This doesn't seem like this is ready for prime time. And it's like, it's still on the rack. So you have to acculturate a homeowner into this. Mm-hmm. And eventually they get it and they're fine. Like within 6 months, they're like, you guys got it.
You got to do a little, you were saying everything and you're using analogies. And I'm like, oh, I've got a similar analogy, but I don't want to throw myself into this because I want this to be about you guys. But I love that I could kind of mesh with you guys on this level because, we have to train these landlords into understanding what it is. And if they can't let go.
Yeah.
If they can't let go of that hold, and I always have to have this conversation with them. Why did you hire me in the first place?
Right.
What did you want to accomplish? And I go back to those wants and needs. And if they don't, then I'd say, there's sometimes where I'm like, it seems like you want to do this.
Right.
You can pay me, and then you do all the work, but I'm going to feel bad about it at the end of the day. I mean, I'll sort of feel okay.
Right. You're not getting your value.
Red ash, but like at the same time, mm-hmm. this might be better if it's you, because ultimately we know where those relationships go. Where do those relationships go when they won't release control over that? They hired you. They're getting in the way. They're adding on time and cost. And eventually, like, you start looking at your perceived expenses for this one property, and you're like, I have money in the bank, but I'm kind of upside down on this thing.
Right.
And you have to that's the eventuality of it. Yeah. Unless you can retrain them. If you you can, then great. But if you can't, then sometimes we have to say, this isn't the way
it all comes down to really two words, and that's care and trust. That's it.
They wouldn't be in there if there wasn't they wouldn't be in that situation with you as micromanaging if the trust got damaged, or if it didn't get established in the beginning.
And they think you don't care.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's it. And, you know, everybody's a little untrusting until they do. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, some homeowners have been a joy. Like, you wonder why they don't bug you more than they do. And then some are like, you can't try to enter the property when a guest is there. You know what I mean?
Tell you what's up.
Like, you know, I know you love your home and this is how the wheels and the bus go round.
Yeah, you didn't get to this position by just playing around. You got here through heartache, turmoil, crush it. For the folks getting into y'all, I mean, I kind of wonder, at least from the property management aspect, what does entering into that market mean? Obviously, people might start with their own properties. Once they get successful with their own, because everyone, mm-hmm. it sounds like I'm hearing a common story here. Once they get successful with their properties, let's scale it up. Oh, I've got a friend. Oh, I've got this. Oh, hey, by the way, I'm already kind of playing here.
Right.
Now I'm going to open it up. Let's get a website. Let's start going. Sure. It starts to spiral.
No.
Let's just
make a distinction here.
I thought that was going to be easier.
What Stay Local has done is spent since, what'd you say, 2017?
Mm-hmm.
Building a professional property management business from the ground up, not because it just made a little extra money, but because they chose to build a career in that become a professional mm-hmm. company.
That's right.
Not to be confused with co-hosting, which is also a fun, cool thing.
That's gig economy stuff.
So
is that where you're doing the book? Sorry, help me differentiate.
So Airbnb came up with this concept of co-hosting mm-hmm. predominantly.
Okay.
And What that's cool is if you're an individual who owns a home or two and has short-term rentals, and you thought it was kind of fun and kind of cool and you're pretty good at it and you have some friends and mm-hmm. you're like, you know, I'd like to do this for someone else and I could really help Karen over here, you know, have mm-hmm. a little less stress, then you can do what's called co-hosting on the Airbnb platform, and that allows you to be the face of their property. Mm-hmm. Like a property manager without a real estate license or some type of other professional mm-hmm. background. And you can just, with a click of a mouse, they can assign you a percentage that they're going to pay you of their margin mm-hmm. and assign you all the calendar responsibility, all the guest interaction, and you become the primary host or the calendar management host. Mm-hmm. And which is really cool if you want to dabble in, make a little extra income and you think you're pretty good at this, mm-hmm. you're willing to invest some training. Yeah, you can become a co-host. There's a lot of benefits of co-hosting to investors and owners mm-hmm. without going into that, but it's also not to be confused with full-scale property management.
Right. That sounds where y'all are differentiating yourselves to a degree, right?
Well, both of us are doing property management.
Right. Yeah, do y'all, question, and you mentioned this a mm-hmm. second ago, but it was one place I wanted to get to. Do y'all have real estate licenses?
No.
You don't?
No.
Have you ever?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Don't want to.
Good.
Don't want
to
sell.
I wanted to ask this
in Texas, you don't have to.
In Texas, you don't have to. Is that for short term specific? Because I thought property manager, I'm a licensee, and I thought property management as if you work for the person that owns the property in like kind of their company, like if it's a multifamily property mm-hmm. and you're like a leasing agent or property manager, they can pay you directly and you don't need a license.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, with what I do on this long-term management, yeah, I am required to have a license.
Yes.
Y'all are very interesting because it's a newer,
your property has to rent for less than 30 days.
That's the distinction.
Yeah, interesting. I think probably the distinction would be whether there's a Texas lease agreement involved. When there are no lease agreements per se in short-term renting. I mean, you can put some agreement if you want.
You don't have one? I'm surprised. Yeah, like, yeah, there's got to be a contract.
With short-term rentals, the less than 30 day would define a short-term rental. Yeah, right. You're going to stay less than 30 days,
yeah.
It's called short-term rental, and you can book it like
you're renting a car.
But how do you tie people in? I guess you're not tying people in contractually.
Well, average stay is, you know, like,
yeah,
3 to 7 days, 3 to 10 mm-hmm. days.
We get people to sign agreements, but it's mainly so that they understand the house rules, that we yeah. know if it's a big group, we know who's there.
House rules.
It's more of a rules of engagement and accountability than like, if you don't pay your rent, I'm, you know, going to call an attorney. I think maybe that's a distinction why a real estate license is needed.
I guess it probably makes sense because with that element, if you don't have that, so you're saying there's no bilateral agreement.
We have a tenant that's bad. We can just call the cops and kick them out.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're only, again, it's a vacation rental.
Yeah.
Now there are midterm rentals.
Yes, we had someone on who
you know,
did
and I don't actually know. Do you need I should know this, but do you need a real estate license for a midterm rental, 3 months or more?
I don't. I mean, the people, not on Airbnb,
the people that we spoke to, yeah. I guess it was about a month ago. Yeah. Vivian Yip, James Keller, what's up?
Did you say Vivian?
Vivian Yip, you know her?
Yeah.
She's awesome, and her husband's cool too. Yeah. They both got rad.
Yeah,
it was rad. But they were telling us that James got his license. I think Vivian was working on hers, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Grace? No. She had hers? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I was curious about that because, you know, y'all are still playing in like similar waters, whether or not you're having some sort of like mm-hmm. legal contractual element. Maybe that's the thing that's keeping it from cresting over.
Yeah.
Because at one point in time, and I've got one client who's been a long time. He's an old man. He's in his, I don't know, probably 200 years old. I don't know, but I love him to death, and he's a thorn in my side. He's one of those landlords who would not let go, but finally, through like mm-hmm. working with him for like 6 years, he's way more chill.
Yeah.
But he helped form the Texas Real Estate Commission back in the day.
Wow.
And he was telling me that it was like the Wild West. He was like, everyone's doing all these wild and weird things, and we finally did this. And now you have tracking. He kind of feels like some sort of like parentage mm-hmm. of the whole thing, which I feel is cool. And whenever I drive him down to New Braunfels, he gives me an earful.
Yeah.
Well, for y'all, you're kind of in that Wild West mode, mm-hmm. and and this is still, in my opinion, it's an old industry, but it's a newer industry to come to the forefront. And anyone can get in there, and I want to ask this question just for the thought project. Would y'all want that to be a specific license or not? Would that be positive for the industry? Would that be a positive for the customers?
I think it's probably more a positive.
I know how I feel about
for
it,
the company. So it wouldn't surprise me to have folks within the Stay Local Austin pictorial world that do. And the reason for that is you're dealing with homeowners who might want to sell their home. And now you're dealing with an off-market thing where you can now have another revenue stream within your business to help, you know, not just offboard the home, but sell it. I would think there's a benefit to having that. I don't want to see more compliance. I mean, that we've already got, I don't know if you have compliance issues.
I was going to get into the permitting and compliance part in just a second.
Yeah. I mean, once you get to get a license, which is opened up now more for investors, that was closed out or blocked out for them. They couldn't get a type 2 license. There are three different types of licenses you get here.
Licensing isn't a permit from the city or municipality
to allow you to operate a short-term rental.
Okay. Right.
And so it's eased, but it's still some hoop jumping. So as an example, when you, I don't know if this is true for long-term renting, but do you have to have a certificate of occupancy that you present to the tenant that basically says, this home can be lived in?
No, I'm
you
assuming
you have to have that.
I'm assuming
in short
that's
term
there,
world.
But we keep finding these landlords come to us. They have a house that has all these things. It's got electricity, gas, water. Somebody's been blessing this thing. We just bought this, Justin. We just bought this. We want to put some tenants in there. Help us out. What do you do?
Right.
We go through the pitch. We get some people in there.
Yeah.
We had one that was a duplex.
Yeah,
that was in an HOA community, which doesn't have any other duplexes in it.
Uh-huh.
Someone cried foul when we put up two signs because we're like, hey, duplex, whatever, we'll throw it in here.
Sure.
Turns out duplex was not allowed, and we had to then spend about a year converting it back to a single family residence, which was, now what? This gets really weird. I guess I'm not exactly asking for COs off the bat, but I mean, you kind of make me, we have everything we do has a checklist. Yeah. Being in property management means that you have to be a master. And I'm definitely going to extend it to short term. You have to be a master of everything that could go wrong, or you might have to come across. Because every time you come across a problem, you're like, that's not happening again.
That's right.
I'm including the plan. The team's going to know about it. We're going to have a system or process. So we've got, when people come join us, I ask for the world.
Yeah.
I have not asked for a CEO. And I'm not even sure why
you don't
find
even
one.
Need it when you're buying a home.
Like, but you bank, need it for short
the
term.
The bank is not even requiring that.
Yeah.
Like, whether the home can even be lived in or not.
They will have an appraisal.
Okay.
Which is kind of like appraisers are licensed.
They walk through and inspect
by the tech.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it just makes sure that there's not a hole in the roof. Yeah. And opening up to, like, birds flying in or something like that. It has to have doors and a heating element and a water heater.
Yeah. And as it
like
should
that.
Be. But, you know, at the same time, in the short-term world, you can run into a situation where you're trying to just get all the things ready for license submission. And certificate of occupancy has proven to be the most difficult one, because any home that was built before 1986, they do not have an electronic copy. Even if there's a certificate of occupancy on file, they don't have an electronic copy of it. So what you end up having to do is file what's called an amnesty certificate of occupancy. You have to prove that it's a residency with utility bills, a city directory. You gotta find all of this proof that this is people have actually been living in this home since whatever, 1930. And then they'll come out and they'll inspect everything. They'll do a safety check. They'll do all the things, and then they'll get you a certificate of occupancy. That could hold up the licensing process for like 6 months, depending on what needs to be done.
How fast is the licensing process in general? Like if you had that together.
8 weeks.
Okay, so not long.
Is there
much effort from you, or is that all just waiting on the bureaucracy to
As
to
long
turn?
As you have all the documents required, it's pretty fast in terms of submission. And the way we look at it, it's like if we pay for the license, we've submitted the documents, and you know when they've got the documents because they've cashed the check that you put in the packet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At that point, you're like, well, you know, during COVID, all those city people were working from home. They were backed up for months on that stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
And so we're like, look, your resource problem cannot be our resource problem or our homeowner's resource problem. You have our money. You have all the documents. We're moving forward. And we've told the city that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's fine. And, you know, generally it comes down to maybe a, you know, if there's any issue at all, and there never was, it was probably a complaint from a neighbor going, hey, I think they're operating a short-term rental. They come out. Once they see the packet is in the hands of the code of the city people, then that's it. They walk away and they're like, we're fine.
Yeah, because you're already
you
in
did
queue.
The due diligence.
Yeah, you can't do anything about them slow playing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting. I have so many other questions to ask, but yeah. I know that we have very little time. I'm looking at Grace here and there, and she's kind of like giving me winks. That just means you guys have to come back, please.
Sure.
So I'm the question before we kind of do our closeout stuff that I would have for y'all is, and Denise, you first. What is the future of short-term rentals right now? What are you guys paying attention to? What are you being prepared for? Because when we're, you know, when we're kind of riding the market, it's going to go through ebbs and flows. We have mm-hmm. to be diligent. You're going to conferences. What's on the forefront here? I mean, I'm mm-hmm. not asking you to like really decipher the crystal ball too hard, mm-hmm. but what do you feel in your plums here?
It's a good question.
You want to go first?
Yeah, you go ahead first. I'm about to answer, but it's still coming together.
I guess that the 10,000 foot view is that this is similar to other industries in that there's going to be a consolidation of things, software.
True. That's good.
People, company, all that kind of stuff. And that should produce a better product, I hope.
Meaning it would get easier, you think?
Yeah, just better tools. That, you know, just, you know, a more sophisticated market. So, you know, a lot of people who were traditionally hotel stayers because of COVID have now become, you know, like, oh, the short-term thing wasn't too bad. So there, it's here to stay, but it's clearly going through this pricing issue because of the saturation, you know, oversaturation in certain areas. I think there'll be a correction in that as people there's going to be this water level.
Yeah, I feel like we're seeing some yo-yo here. People are getting in, people are getting out.
That's
the market's
right.
changing on who's
It'll
getting.
It'll settle
in.
At some point.
It's at least shaking off the like the lemming herd.
That's right.
From just oversaturating
That's
or
right.
pulling out all at once,
mm-hmm.
and then. Maybe we'll look closer to like
and
an equilibrium.
The cream will rise to the top.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, how many car manufacturers were there in the early days and how many hotel chains were there in the early days? You mm-hmm. know, eventually that gets consolidated and the best survive. And that's true for these homes. And, you know, we never really answered the luxury home question. And that is varying for sure. It's not what you think. A luxury home is not that house on the side of the, you know, Hollywood Hills, you know, 28,000 square feet with several pools. That's a luxury home, mm-hmm. but that's not really this market. A luxury home is, you know, the 5-bedroom in Tarrytown that has a pool and a game room and is just, you know, fairly new build. That's a luxury home as opposed to, you know, a 1930s bungalow on the east side,
mm-hmm.
which is fine because that works for the people who want that. So I think there's going to be a correction, and I think it'll level off and get a bit more sophisticated. What I think I am concerned about is what is the guest experience with this automation race to the bottom as things do get bigger and more
industrialized. Consolidate. We were talking about the bigger companies, the mm-hmm. cracks within, people
yeah.
slipping through,
yeah. Yeah.
failure in that, reliance on AI too much or
yeah.
the wrong ways. Which we'll have to figure that
yeah.
out.
And
yeah.
and you know the market will speak. If they don't like what they see, they're going to say it. And then that's, you know, that might be the beginning of the end, because again, this is all around trust. Does a guest believe what they saw online is mm-hmm. what they're walking into, and did they enjoy that experience? If that starts to suck and become questionable, like 50% of the time, short-term renting is toast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just going to struggle to ever get that confidence back.
Especially on those major platforms, because those major platforms could have legal problems or could have financial issues next year, and boom, they would be gone. And the
yeah.
moment those any one of them fails, let's just say we'll reference Airbnb,
a regulation change,
something
and
happens,
then they get
yeah.
cut off,
and one of them is gone. Guess what? People with direct booking sites who have been in this business,
mm-hmm.
who've been focusing on guest experience, hospitality, curating experiences, we rise to the top and we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But those people who are relying on those platforms, which is what we all start off doing, and it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you can't just get into this and have a house and think, oh, I'll just rent it out and it'll make money. Like,
mm-hmm.
no, you actually have to be in the business of hospitality. You have to actually care about providing a great experience. And our prices are going to do whatever the market does to us. And right now, our prices are so high that we're not really as competitive in the short-term rental market as we used to be to hotels. So mm-hmm. hotels are starting to creep back up again mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. our fees between our cities and our tax fees and our platform fees and our host fees and blah, blah, blah.
The fees on fees on fees
and the cleaning
on fees,
fees. Yeah, miscellaneous. Cleaning is a big thing, right? A hotel has a great giant group of people, and included in that $299 price is your cleaning, right? Mm-hmm. And they come, they don't necessarily come every day anymore like they used to, but you know.
Most of the time you're hitting the do not disturb.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You know, yeah. But our cleaning rates are pretty dang high right now in
Austin.
Yeah,
I think because there's the premium for that individual. They have to travel there, mm-hmm. do all those other things that are special to yeah. it as well.
And there's a little bit of just, I don't think that we as hosts have necessarily learned the art of managing and building professional cleaning teams. I think a lot of times it's kind of like contractors. Mm-hmm. We really haven't discovered how to treat our cleaning teams in a way they feel a part of your vision, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not enough to just go find someone who can clean your short-term rental. You really have to build a relationship with them. You have to invest in them. You have to care about their future. They have to see your vision.
That's right.
You know, and it's...
Is this a third party, or is this someone that
cleaning
you
teams
bring
are
in
almost,
house?
Usually individuals, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In the beginning, they're almost always individuals.
Yeah,
and then
right.
you hire...
You find good ones for your...
Hire them on when you can.
Mm-hmm. I would think one layer that I'd like to see added to short-term renting, and I think it's getting there with Marriott Homes and Villas, is the ability for people to use loyalty points.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so if they return, you have to return year over year. Does that mean to the same place or just with the same network?
I think it's just like, you know, like you would with Marriott. Like, you know, you have your credit card that builds up all of these points, and can you use that to go buy travel, you know, flights or hotel rooms?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there are enough mechanisms. I don't know why Airbnb hasn't figured this out, or why they won't bother doing this. But, you know, think about everybody that's ever shopped on there. They should be gaining points for doing that, and then be able to use those points, unless it's something they're doing and I've just missed it. That's something that, because that's going to affect business travel, and I would love to see more business travel in short-term renting, but I think there's a little bit of maybe an HR issue. Like, I don't know if we want to put you guys in a house. We want you all in a hotel and
safe.
Yeah, well, safer. Also the hotels figure this out over time.
Yeah.
Conference rooms are there.
That's
the
right.
Business sections there. You get the breakfast.
All
in the
those
morning.
Amenities. Which yeah. is it, what's funny is that short-term renting was trying to mimic the hotel world by having towels that are, you know, done in a decorative way on the bed, make it look like a hotel. And now you see hotels kind of taking on what short-term rent, like having a selfie wall or bicycles that you can, you know, sign up and rent. So you're starting to see these markets kind of figure each other out. In fact, some new properties are going up or a hybrid of those things.
Oh, I can totally see that.
Yeah.
You know, and
keyless check-ins at boutique hotels.
Yeah.
Boutique hotels are big.
Yeah, that would make the smaller ones, but still
no front desk.
And that's the in between, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
no
that's
front
that's
desk.
Kind of where there is no black and what the point of the podcast is all about. There
right.
is no black and white in this
right.
world. There's so much room, and there's ebb and flow and tug and pull,
mm-hmm.
that that's where the cool innovation happens, and it's remarkable when we see these big peaks or valleys in our market, depending on what people are doing. Like you just see so much demand all at once. Well, guys, this is a fantastic podcast. I appreciate it. I would love to have you all back on and give us some the one thing I we talked about, like, the future of short-term rentals right now for just a brief second, but I'd love to check in with y'all later on and just be like, how's it changing?
Mm-hmm.
What's new?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Yeah.
What's working? What's not working?
This year will be very telltale.
Because this is going to change. And the
reason, it will change.
One of the reasons why we didn't get into that game was just because I was like, it is all over the place. And I was like,
you got to be all in.
Yeah, I was like,
you got
to
be
all
in.
I was like, this can't be like a side service that we do. I was like, we can't devote enough resources to that because it's so time intensive, high touch.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way you'd want to do it.
Yeah.
That, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to go that direction. I wanted something a little bit, not easier, but something in our wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tommy Sigarosa, correct?
Siragusa.
Siragusa.
That's all right.
Tommy Sigarosa. I'll get it right.
It's a mouthful. You're not the only one.
What's the background on that?
Sicilian.
Sicilian? Oh, mm-hmm. No kidding. That's very cool.
It's actually it's a small town. Well, of course, all the towns in Sicily are on the coast, but it's one of them.
Siracusa.
The WASP version of that is Syracuse.
Okay.
Syracuse is the actual name, suspect maybe a letter was changed at Ellis Island.
Somewhere on the Ellis Island.
Yeah. So, Syracuse is a real name.
No doubt.
Because there's Tony Siracusa, who's not related to us, although he looks like he is. I think he's dead now, but it is a real name, but probably altered from its original form.
We dropped our Irish O somewhere along the way as well. I always regret not having it because I would love to have those lineages instead of just being Americanized and like
what does the O mean? It's like the O with apostrophe.
I don't know. Is that top of the morning to you? Yeah, of Rourke or something like that. But Tommy is with Stay Local.
Stay Local Austin by Portoro.
Austin by Portoro. Uh-huh. Please check him out. He's amazing. Tommy, you have, I believe, Daniel, we need to put, by the way, I wanted to have like wrestler faces cut out and put them over the monitor so that way we'd be like, if you could look deep into the eyes of Macho Man Randy Savage over here
right
and tell him who you think might be a good new guest to have in the future, we would love it if you would challenge someone to come on here and tell us more about their interesting segment of the financial real estate business world. We're looking to get as many people as we possibly can.
That would be amazing. I think you got a good mix here because you've got two, I think, really distinctly different markets, and so having those, you know,
if it was all the same thing, and this is the trouble when we have a bunch of realtors in here, that's why we have to get them drunk and talking.
But I would love to hear from an investor who got the memo in 22. And went and bought a few properties and took them short term. How are they doing?
Okay.
I would love to know that. And that's true for real estate companies who may be doing the same thing.
Do you know of anybody who might be willing to speak about that?
I think so. Let me look. Yeah.
Is there a name you'd like to challenge if you don't feel confident?
No, I'd have to look.
That's fine.
I'd have to look, yeah.
I appreciate that.
It's been a while.
Denise Poteet.
Yes.
With Host Del Casa.
Yes.
When I don't have my notes in front of me, I have to work off memory. With Host Del Casa. Please, is there anybody that you'd like to have come on or see?
I think that there is probably an interest out there in financing. So mm-hmm. I would like a bank whisperer to come on and tell us about creative financing for people who, you know, there's a certain point in your investment journey where if you didn't understand how to play the chess right, mm-hmm. you kind of get like asset rich, cash poor. And so there is a strategy to leveraging these investments, and there is a time at which you have to let go of some of the investments that you have because they no longer serve you. And I think finding and having guests on here that can really speak to how do you build your portfolio, how do you look ahead 2 years so that you can grow your portfolio into 10, 15, 20 properties as an individual in an LLC. There's a strategy there. My mentor, Bill Faith, taught us how to do that. Haven't reached all the goals yet, but he taught us. And a lot of my mentors and a lot of people I follow are not necessarily here in Austin. But I could put you in touch with some people that are really smart on creative financing. And maybe there's even opportunity to do a Zoom interview remote.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk after the
that
podcast.
That would be good.
Denise, how do people find you? Where do you want them to find you?
Well, there's lots of ways to find me. I've got two names you can find me. One, just Denise at hostdelcasa.com or go to hostdelcasa.com. And then if you are interested in any kind of, I don't know, unique retreat, glamping related, in my own personal group, I'm known as the Glamping Queen. And I love helping people find new properties, build new micro retreats. Our boutique retreat is called Safari for the Soul Glamping, and you should try a stay. Nobody knows about us. We're in Marble Falls, and we have three luxury tents out there.
Awesome. So I'd love to check it out. I'm going to tell you a lot about it. Tommy, where can people find you that want to do business with you?
Stay local ATX.com.
Okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Do you have any social media handles or anything like that that you go by?
You can find all of those on the website.
Gotcha.
But yeah,
they'll
if you
be
search,
in the notes.
Yeah,
we will. Yes, we
show notes.
Our guests filled out the questionnaire today, which means that we can put you guys on and plug y'all in, which is great.
Yeah.
Thank y'all so much. We appreciate y'all being here. We'd love to see y'all come back. Everyone, thank you so much again for being here. We appreciate you. That's the end of our show. Go on and get. Have a great day. See y'all later.
Cheers.